Coming up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Kenny Nursery and Topsoil, celebrating 50 years of providing bulk soils, organic fertilizers, high-octane soil amendments, and a large selection of landscape materials. Kenny Nursery and Topsoil specializes in helping you grow everything from tomatoes to cannabis. Deliveries are available from Sacramento to the Oregon border, and more information on Facebook at kennynursery.com. And by the Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. Welcome to North State Give and Take. My name is Bobby Tryon, and today we have a pre-recorded interview with Pam Larry. I'd like to welcome Pam Larry from... Pam, go ahead. You tell me where you're from.
Sure. We are the Butte County Local Food Network.
Okay. And it's interesting because I've seen you at the farmer's market for now a couple of years, right? Working on this and pulling parts of it together.
Yeah. So do you want a little bit of the history?
I do.
Okay. So I used to be a food justice advocate, mostly around food transparency. And that took the form mostly of getting genetically modified ingredients in foods labeled so that we had a right to know what we were eating. I started that, actually, it'll be 10 years ago in January is when I started that effort. And then I worked in that for about 5 years, really, you know, 60 to 80 hours a week. I lived it, breathed it, all that kind of stuff. Became a gypsy. I had a gypsy lifestyle, just traveling all over the place. And, but then I started to kind of like burn out because it's very angry work. It's very depressing. And I kept getting these little like things of victory gardens, you know, those little nudges, those little internal nudges that we get oftentimes. And so around 2016, 17, I thought I was going to do something national, and I called it the Good Food Brigade. And it was about growing our own food and encouraging people to start gardens, to be more food independent and food secure and food sovereign, and to support local farmers and to really bring the global food system back to more regional and local food system. Because the studying that I had been doing and, you know, all this stuff showed me that the global food system, number one, is ruining the planet. It's one of the major contributors to all aspects of poisoning and climate chaos and all sorts of stuff. But it's also very fragile in terms of its integrity. And that was a very difficult discussion because for quite a few years, because we live in a country where we've never been hungry. We've never had empty shelves. We can go into any grocery store and get whatever we want, whenever we want it. Doesn't matter whether it's in season or not. You know, the quality isn't very good because oftentimes it's old, but that's a whole nother subject. But now with COVID, that discussion is a heck of a lot easier because COVID and the disruption to all the food supply chains and the just-in-time delivery system and, you know, COVID shutting down meat processing plants between climate chaos that started, you know, that really started impacting crops a couple years ago. And then with all this, I mean, we could go into that if you want to later, but we're talking about history right now. It just really, really showed me. But let me go back a little bit. So I started the Good Food Brigade, but then I also hooked up with this woman whose name is Maria Giovanni at the university. She's a health and nutrition science professor. And we wanted to do a local food assessment. to see where we were, because, you know, if you want to increase the local food economy, you have to know where you're at to start. So we started to get that going. I also started to do a local branch of the Good Food Brigade, but it was just too much. And so, like with all that stuff, you know, nothing got quite done quite right. And the local thing pretty much, you know, limped along, you know. And then the fire hit. And in Camp Fire in 2018, I had been doing a deep dive into climate chaos and, you know, found out the true state of what's going on. And between that knowledge, I had to go through a grieving process, I'll be honest. I don't do grief lightly. It took me about 6 or 8 months to work through a lot of it. And it just kind of, the minute the fire happened and we became a community of climate migrants, I just decided to stop what I was doing nationally and just focus here. So I took, because I know people all over the country having to do with food stuff, you know, I know some big names, little names, I know folks all over the place, but I don't know very many people here because I had always been running around. So I took 2019 and went to a lot of meetings, you know, just kind of showed up everywhere because it's my, and tried to help other organizations. It's my opinion that you should be giving before you ask. So that's what I tried my best to do. And then I started talking about our first big project that I envisioned, which was called the Victory Garden Blitz. We worked with Grub a couple times and had, you know, three great farm to fork meals, but we didn't really do a whole lot that first year. And then we planned and we geared up for 2020 to be our big coming out party. And so we started advertising about the Victory Garden Blitz, which is this program modeled after something they do in Milwaukee called the Great Milwaukee Blitz. And they started off with 35 gardens and now do 500 gardens each spring. They install them in people's backyards, raised bed gardens. So we got some mentoring for them and I started reaching out, and then we planned on the first blitz being March. So we were able to get the first round. We thought it was going to take 2 weekends. We got the first weekend done. We got 32 gardens installed, and then bam, lockdown happened. And, you know, at that time, everybody was very afraid. You know, everybody didn't know what was going on. You know, there hadn't, you know, we hadn't gone through all this stuff. And so we just shut it down. We were able to complete 10 extra ones. And then the plan was always to do one on the burn scar for the fall. We did just Chico and to Gridley for the first one because we wanted to get our bearings because it was the first one we had done. And then we went up on the burn scar and we were able to get an amazing grant from the Butte Strong Fund and North Valley Community Foundation. So all of those gardens were able to be gifts. The first round in Chico to Gridley, we were able to do some scholarships, but we also had paid, you know, folks who paid for their gardens. And that was really our big, you know, in March was our big thing that got kind of, you know, snuffed out a little bit, but we persevered and it was a great event. And so total last year then and then the fall one we did the week before. It was so funny. We had all these people signed up to volunteer, you know, COVID safe with the masks outside, social distancing, bring your own, you know, group of people that you feel comfortable and safe with and don't have any contact with the, you know, and we're just really trying. And then the fire started, right? And so the air quality, the air quality sucked and we lost about 40% of our volunteers. So, but we regrouped and we asked, you know, if the people who were getting the scholarships, if any of them were willing to install their own. And almost half of the people, you know, showed up and, you know, either came and picked up their stuff and brought, or we delivered it and just left it there and they installed. But we were able to install 58. So we got 103 gardens total installed this year, and it was very exciting. And it was great. But in the meantime, we've added on all sorts of other projects. But that's pretty much the basic history of how we came about. Got a great team by the way. They slowly came on board, and yeah.
Neat. When you say install, give them dirt. You give them right. Yeah.
The raised bed. It's the first blitz. People had a choice to buy the 4x4 or 4x8. And then all of the scholarship ones were 4x4s. And then the second round, since they were all scholarships, it was 4x4s. And so, yeah, it was great. So we bring them the box. Up on the burn scar, we automatically put hardware cloth. It was an add-on down here, but we put hardware cloth. And then we also constructed a kind of semi-hopefully helpful critter abater, kind of like a mini fence around it, made out of chicken wire too. And then they got the soil, they got 6 plants and mulch all in that good order. Yeah, it's really great. Yeah.
And do you keep in touch with them? So they do the garden, and then do you kind of help them with things? I mean, being a gardener can be hard sometimes.
It can be. So with the original one, we offered 3 mentoring sessions that got the kibosh because of COVID. It's very difficult to do that right now, but we've made it clear that people are welcome to reach out with questions. We also have a Facebook page, Local Foodies, and also refer people to another Facebook page around backyard gardening in Butte County to get some mentoring. In a perfect world, and we had planned and we had started the mentoring in the first one, but then, like I said, it's just so many things have had to adjust. And so, you know, I'm very used to Zoom, but, you know, a lot of people aren't, they don't like it. We also could use mentors now, because a lot of those people have just kind of, you know, volunteers come and go, you know, it's understandable. And right now it's just very difficult because people are so afraid, basically, and they're nervous and they're depressed. And, you know, I really believe that action is a great antidote to all of that. But sometimes we get so lost in our fear or our concern or our confusion that we forget that if we, you know, as I forget, you know, and I know this, you know, but it's that human contact is, we need that with each other. We, you know, I think we're just tribal critters and we just need each other to really function well. And if we're isolated, we don't function as well.
You know, I noticed another part of it that I was interested in, and that is, I think it's your vision, a strong local economy. Kind of understanding that this is there's a big picture, and then there's your garden in your backyard, which of course is a huge part of it, and I get it, boots on the ground. What are some of your thoughts about that?
Well, so I look at food security. They're basically, it's all a continuum and it's all connected. You cannot say any one thing is more important than the other, you know, whether it's a seed, it's the harvest, it's the preservation, or it's a processing plant that's, you know, whatever. So, but we look at food security as having 2 major components. The first one is acute food insecurity, where people are hungry today. Okay. And how can we address that? I can talk a little bit about how we do address that in a little bit, but there's also the long-term systemic food security, which everybody looks at the acute because it's right in front of our faces, but we don't look at or talk about how important it is to look at what we're doing and to get off of that global just-in-time delivery fragile system that we're all a part of now. So how can we bring, and this is actually something that's going on over all over the country now because of the challenges that COVID has exposed and the frailties that COVID has exposed. There are conversations going on at, you know, from the local all the way to the national on how can we redo the food system and bring it back home more, because everybody's seeing that it is much more secure of a thing. So one of the biggest selling points to establish local food security is to focus on the local economy. Because if you look at a bunch of analysts and people who talk about transition movements, or, you know, there's, you know, moving away from this global capitalistic to a more, you know, locally centric, food is at the basis of the economy. So if you can create more food here, whether it's in our backyards, community gardens, farmers, you know, are a big piece of you know, what I do is to try to find ways to support the local farmers, because they are going to be the ones that are really feeding us, you know, a lot, because they're the ones that really know how to grow food. I mean, even if we're doing stuff in our backyards, we're going to need to draw on their knowledge, you know, to be able to really produce. You know, I mean, these days I'm hearing, you know, the Homeland Security Department, Homeland Security, and, you know, a lot of folks really focusing on the next big 9/11, there's a good chance it's going to be a power grid attack because it's such an easy thing to have happen. Well, if that happens, we're screwed because everything's dependent on the grid. You know, you've got the growers needed to be able to hook up with the distributors, it's crazy. So we're going to have to learn really, really fast if that happens. So my talking point is, why don't we start coming together to talk about ways that we can at least start doing little things so that we've got some practice to maybe mitigate an unthinkable. That's how I'm presenting it to the community at large, because we've had 3 major unthinkables in less than 2 years. We had the 2 fires and we had COVID. And, you know, we just count on those trucks bringing that food. We just count on it. But if something happens, and this, I don't want to be a fear monger. I don't want to be anything. I think it's wise. We get insurance as individuals. You know, we take precautions. And if all of that stuff doesn't happen, it's a win-win-win-win-win all the way around. But it really helps business people and funders to focus when you start talking about, we would be more financially stable and more economically abundant here locally if we were to start opening doors and avenues and coming up with different strategies to create partnerships and collaborations that will support a stronger local food system. Because we've got a great local food system going now, but what can we do to make it stronger? And those conversations are happening, which is very exciting.
We'll take a little break here from North State Give and Take. You've been listening to Pam Larry from the Butte Local Food Network. Back to our interview with Pam Larry from the Butte Local Food Network. You're listening to North State Give and Take on 90.1 FM KZFR Chico. My name is Bobby Tryon.
It's all connected. And, you know, when somebody starts growing their own food and they taste the difference, you know, they're going to go to the farmer's market more readily because they're used to really good tasting food now. And then they start going to the market and they say, oh, well, this isn't really more expensive, dispelling the myth that it's so expensive at the farmer's market, which it is not. People are starting to understand a little bit more. But again, COVID has really, really elevated this whole thing and brought it to light all over the country and here. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Very cool. The thing I don't want to forget, I want to talk a little bit about the acute need.
Sure. So for the acute need, last April, Jenny Lowry at From the Ground Up Farms, Inc. Called and asked if I could help her get fresh local food up to the folks in Concow. And I had never, when we were talking, we formed this organization, it never crossed my mind, or nor did I want to be a food distributor. However, again, you go where the need is and it supports local farmers. So I told her that I would only do local food. And because this addresses the long-term systemic issues, you know, by supporting the farmers, then they have more of a market so that they can slowly grow. So again, blah, 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 they're mitigating. But we've been bringing food up to Concow. We were doing Wednesday and Saturday for a while, but now it's just Saturday. And so we've been doing that since April. We've distributed over 18 tons of food up there. You know, thanks to our amazing farmers at the farmers market, you know, I was able to get some funding and so able to pay them, because we can't count on the farmers always having to donate. We have to support them, again, addressing that long-term systemic thing. And then I am just shocked, but what I'm very busy, I've been kind of quiet lately and not really out much or pestering people, as I like to call it, because last September, Richard Kuhn from the Farmers Market sent an email telling us, you know, me and another person, that there was a grant and why don't we use this to see if we can get a refrigerated van so that we will be able to distribute food more. And I never thought, because it really didn't even meet the parameters of the grant, I didn't think. But I applied, put everything aside, and we got it. We got enough money. I went down 3 weeks ago and picked up the van down in Southern California. It is waiting for the modification guy, and then it's going to get a wrap. I'm talking with the people up in Megalia. We're going to be at the Megalia Community Center, the new one, Thursdays. And we don't have the time yet, but we're going to start up there January 7th. And we're going to continue going to ConCal. We were able to get a food stamp machine, so we'll be able to offer food stamps. And I'm going to try, people will be paying for the, you know, full price food stamps, or we don't want people to fall through the cracks. So I'm trying to figure out creative ways to be able to ensure that everybody's able to get food. So that's the acute food security that we are addressing. You know, I think we're also doing it with the gardens. And then we also have a seed distribution. Of course, that's both systemic and local acute, where we deposit. And I think somebody's going to be doing it one last round of deliveries this weekend at the tiny libraries around town. So that was actually Deborah Lucero's idea. And we will have, by the end, after this, over 2,000 seed packets in the tiny libraries over the course of the year. So that's been a lot of fun. We're trying to like figure out how we can get more food being grown here in our community and get the young farmers paid to do it. I don't know if, you know, you got to look at demographics, look at our farmers market. It's very difficult for young people to come into farming right now because of school loans. I mean, all these things are all connected. School loans and land is so expensive that they simply cannot buy it. You know, and on top of that, they've got their loans. But then also what happens is that, you know, they have to rent land, you know, but then if that's not stable for them, so there's really no way for them to build any kind of infrastructure to support a really well-honed and functioning and successful farm. So we're having conversations about that behind the scene. We need more people. We need more people that are excited about this to come and join us. We need business people, you know, we need an accountant, we need a lawyer. We need people who are interested in building businesses like this van. That, you know, the idea is to have it be totally self-sufficient within a couple of years, you know, but in the meantime, we're going to need grants, you know, and we want to expand it past ConCal and Megalia. We want to do a stop in Paradise. We want to, you know, keep going up past, you know, maybe to Pulga, you know, for a couple of hours, over to Berry Creek, Thermalito. I mean, all the places where it's, you know, the fresh food doesn't come there very often, but that's going to take help. You know, we need help doing that. And
so do you go to the farmer's market at the end of the farmer's market? Is that how you do that?
I do that. Yep. I go at the end and there's a certain amount I give the people and they can either just do across the board. Like some of the farmers don't give any kind of a discount. Some give a little bit of a discount. Some will give a little bit extra. And some, like Grub, give vast amounts of food and then bring it up to ConCal. And we have been giving the food away up there, but that's going to have to change with the van. Yeah.
And I think the website is good.
Well, thank you. BClocalfood.org.
You know, one of the reasons that we're doing this is just for what you're saying. We need help. And that this is, you know, hey, go there.
Yeah, yeah, we need help. And you will be helped because you will come out of whatever is going on with you, you know, and become part of a community that's giving back to your community. And it's, you know, the circle of life. And it feels good. And it's just magic. It can change how you walk in the world. I mean, instead of sitting in front of your computer on Facebook, getting angry at people, you can, you know, deliver seeds. I mean, it's just silly little things. Or if you're a good gardener, you don't even have to be an expert, but just somebody who would be willing to hold a newbie's hand and be there for them if they want. It feels good, you know. I think partially, like I said, because we're these tribal critters. But also you get to like forget about all that stuff for a little while and focus on something fun and beautiful. I mean, that was one of my biggest points and why the website I think looks so happy is that I wanted everything to reflect happy, because I was so sick of doing activism work that was so debilitatingly depressing, you know, basically.
Yeah.
I got sick, you know, I got really, really sick.
Yeah.
And this is uplifting and it's fun. So how can we change our world right here, right in our own backyards and down the block? I mean, we talk about creating a community that grows food together. And we've got these dreams of like when we can start gathering again, Ficino Victory Garden, we're going to have farm to fork meals there. You know, we're going to encourage people to have block parties in their neighborhood and start growing food together and maybe canning together. We have a program that's on the website but has never been fully fleshed out called Eat Your Lawn. And it's designed and it's kind of connected to Ficino. You know, and Ficino is like an example of what you could turn your grass into. You know, grass is the largest crop in the United States. It has no function except for to absorb chemicals and water. You know, and it's just a waste, you know. You convert your yard into a food forest, you save about 30% of your water, you're sequestering carbon, you're using less chemicals, you know, and then you get good food and then you get to share it with your neighbors, you know. It's great.
So now, as far as donations and ways for you to raise money, mm-hmm. I know you're doing grants and I know that's your own personal nightmare, but and then donations that people can just donate online, I'm sure.
They can. We have that website, bclocalfood.org. There's a way to do donations there. We sometimes do things right now. We're selling aprons and bags that were printed locally. They're 100% cotton. You can pick up one or four, like I like to say. I always like to make it kind of funny and funky. Another thing that I was so delighted, people I didn't even know, they're doing Facebook fundraisers for us on their birthday. There's that opportunity for you to do a fundraiser for a local cause, and we're registered so you can have us be part of that. And that's just a great way. You know, you just get your friend, you ask your friends instead of giving you a gift, which, you know, let's face it, we've got enough. You know what I mean? We've all got enough. We don't need more stuff. Yeah. Have them donate, or sponsor. We're talking about starting a membership drive and having people join us. And, you know, there's ways for you to be able to sponsor a family if you've got a lot of money, you know, with the food mm-hmm. truck.
And of course, in this time, you can't really do much as far as fundraising out in the world, which
right.
Farm to Fork, that's what it's called. That was a great thing when that was happening.
Oh, yeah. And we'll do more of those as soon as we can.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a bunch of people that like to cook and a bunch of people that like to eat. and it's really fun. You know, we did one brunch that was even the butter and the champagne and the vodka were all within 50 miles. I know, it's very cool. It's very cool.
Yeah. I just am so inspired.
Yeah. Well, good.
And I hope our listeners are too. Please, listeners, if you are hearing this, bclocalfood.org. More information, places where you can volunteer, places where you can donate, and places where you can start to think about this whole idea about what Pam is talking about, just what a big picture it is for our world.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you work on food, you work on justice issues.
Yes.
With, you know, making sure everybody's got equitable resources. You're working on air, you know, the air quality. You're working on saving water.
Yeah.
You're working on your health, you know, your health. And plus, we're increasing community because there's nothing better that creates community than coming around a table and eating a great meal.
Pam, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited and really, really appreciate
it. I'll see you at the market.
Yep, take care. Bye-bye.
You've just heard a pre-recorded interview with Pam Larry from the ButteLocalFoodNetwork.org. If you want to hear it again or tell a friend about it, you can go to KZFR.org, hit Programs, and then go down to Tuesday, and you'll find North State Give and Take, and all of my interviews are there. All right, thanks for listening, and come back again next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Until then.